So, Alex, big weekend coming up for the Red Wolves.
What's going on? I hadn't heard anything about it.
Some game happening in Richmond. But the bigger deal that's happening this weekend is on Monday night, we'll be trick-or-treating. My question to you is this: will you be taking advantage of the fact, or should people take advantage of the fact, that some people will be trick-or-treating on both Saturday and Sunday due to the school night Halloween? Or are you a strict Halloween night only?
I am all about whichever one brings more candy home.
See, that's where I'm at. So I feel like, and I've been trying to convince my family of this, we should be going trick-or-treating on Saturday night, and anyone who's got a light on is fair game.
Soccer chat with two T's, because we're going to chat about soccer, but we're also in Chattanooga, so it's like a play on words. And you know, Chattanooga is a soccer city.
Fun Halloween costume idea. Take the soccer chat logo, print it out, put a little bit of a rubber band around it, wear it on your face, and you can be crazy soccer chat guy. Now give me some candy.
Yeah, I don't know if that's going to play well, except for in very, very specific areas of the town, like Jeff's house. Your mom or your dad doesn't live in the area, so that doesn't work. My mom doesn't live in the area. That's pretty much our entire group. Hi, Mom. All right, so anything interesting happened this last weekend? I hear that there was a really high-scoring game of soccer here in Chattanooga. Is that correct?
So Omaha seemed to think that they were going to win the game in the essay portion that happens after they play on the field. Came very negative.
I will say this much. They had more opportunities than we did.
That's
early
true.
In the first half. They destroyed the bar at one point. Someone told me we hit the bar. I was in the process of discussing.
Distracted.
I was in the process of discussing that fans are allowed to get excited during a playoff game with overzealous security guard guy who wanted to kick the supporters groups out because he's an idiot. He doesn't listen to this podcast because he doesn't know anything about soccer. So there's that. I guess we may have hit the crossbar at 1.2. That's at least what Jeff was mentioning. I never saw it. I haven't gone back and watched the 60th minute because it was like 120 minutes of this game. My question though is, when they knew who was going to start, which could have been at any point during the last week because they hadn't played the four games prior, mm-hmm. Do you think that it adjusted J-Mim's strategy, or do you think J-Mim's only has one strategy and he was hoping to get a 0-0 tie?
Yeah, that seems to be his strategy. As I said before, they get the ball, the goalkeeper holds it for 20 seconds of the 6 seconds they're allowed to hold it. They kick it the length of the field. When defenders gather the ball, they boot it long, hope that someone can run onto it. It worked really well when they had a sharpshooter like Greg Hurst. Herzog, the forward they had on last Saturday, apparently couldn't hit water standing in a boat, and that worked to our advantage, although they did create other chances in that. And Carlos Avalos came up with two or three very important saves in the first half that kept us scoreless. If we had gone into halftime behind, I think it would have really changed the way that the game looked. They look for all their opportunities to waste as much time as possible. And it's why I'm not a huge fan of Omaha, of their style. I think J Mims is overrated. It's a very college style.
It's the lowest scoring team. It's the lowest scoring team in the league, right? At 34 goals per game, they were tied for the lowest scoring. And their big saving grace is that they allowed, you know, the least amount of goals.
Right.
And when you have 13 draws in a season, you're dependent on two things: a really strong goalkeeper, which they have, or had. I'm assuming if he wants to, he can move up to championship at this point.
Mm-hmm.
And a tiny field. And so, unfortunately, they didn't play well enough down the stretch to be able to utilize the tiny field. And I think that came into play when we got into extra time, because they looked tired and we didn't.
Mm-hmm.
We had way more opportunities, and they were more stretched out than they usually are at home, because we were able to actually take a ball from offense to a midfield to their defense, right? From their offense right. to their midfield to their defense, versus from their offense immediately into six in the box.
Able to move out wide.
Yeah,
and actually create gaps for people to run in the middle.
Yeah, totally. It's a totally different game when that happens. And I don't want to stress too much on Omaha, because if you didn't go watch the game, that's on you. If you haven't rewatched stuff, if you didn't get a chance to watch the game, that's on you. So I don't want to spend all of our time on Omaha. I really want to preview Richmond and talk a little bit about the Charlotte Tormenta game. But I do want to show what got us the win. And so this is the Rafa Mensagen goal in the 100th minute, not extra time, extra period. And here's that for you.
Villalobos. Mensingen rides one challenge. Rafa Mensingen, magic carpet goal.
First off, I don't know what a magic carpet goal is, but apparently that's what it is.
It's that, yeah.
What was your number one observation that intrigued you about that goal?
So you had talked about, while we were watching the game, the fact that Omaha seemed to be wanting us to play the ball out wide, where we like to go. We like to get our talented players like Rafa Mensagen, Mo Espinoza, isolated out wide, trying to beat a defender and play a ball into the middle, or be able to cut in to be able to take a shot on goal. In this particular situation, Danny Navarro, who's been a huge addition when he got back from his injury in midseason, saw the passing lane, something that he does as well as anyone in the league. Saw the passing lane to Rafa Mensagen, and Rafa Mensagen was able to go through the middle and find the near post there.
Yeah, so two things that really impressed me about him coming through the middle. Number one, he didn't fall down.
Uh-huh.
Yes. How many times have we talked about that he and other players on our team, I'm looking at you, Mo Espinoza, have a tendency to get a little bit of a touch and think they're going to get a call out of it, and then they don't get the call. And right. If you've got quality rest, which we don't, but if you did, you should do exactly what he did. You play through it, and you give the ref the choice to decide if it's an advantage or if he needs to blow the whistle.
Yeah.
By playing through it, I think it surprised the Omaha players that he played through it. Because if you watch, and I'm going to play it again because I want you to see what I'm talking about. If you watch their defenders after he kind of gets tripped up, they slow down. Watch it again. Here it is.
Villalobos. Mensingen rides one challenge. Rafa Mensingen.
I'm speaking specifically of goal. Number 22.
Rafa Mensingen.
Right. So if you're on your screen, he's right here. He just kind of starts jogging like, oh, this is done. They're going to blow the whistle. Nope. And if you would have run full speed because he was slowed up, it might have resulted in a whistle because we would have lost the advantage. But thank you for becoming a spectator, one of the 2,500 that were there. And it's the other second thing that it was really impressive about this goal, and you mentioned this, it was near post. You don't normally beat a goalkeeper of his caliber near post. And where we were sitting in the supporter section, we got a straight line to look at that.
Yeah.
And he curved that sucker from missing the goal into the post. Beautiful shot.
Yes. I love the celebrations. I love that, you know, they've been able to kind of take the pictures of him running. He knows where that TV camera is.
Yeah.
And he loves to go to it and celebrate. And it's not a Jamie Tartt pointing at his back kind of celebration, but he knows to go to the camera, give the heart, start turning around and hugging his teammates. So I always love when Rafa Mensagen scores on that far side and he is able to turn and come back towards the camera and give us some good memeable content.
Yeah, he's got a good celebration. Galindra's dance celebrations are good. but they still don't match. And I hate saying these words out loud since he is competing against us. They don't match the Amon Zaid coming off the bench, scoring the header from the corner, and jumping over the fence and celebrate with the fans. That was amazing. Yes. And this is the type of goal, the type of game where, honestly, I would have liked it if he went over to the fans behind the goal and celebrated with them versus going to the camera. But it was great, right? I'm not trying to like say you shouldn't have done what you did, but
right,
that was one of those goals that like he goes to the fans and the fans are going to go wild. And there was a good amount of fans over there.
Right.
All right. So anything else about that Omaha game that you think we need to carry over as we head into Richmond, and then we'll get into our Richmond preview.
No, I can't think of anything. We called out Carlos for the important saves that he made in the first half. He had a really good game. The defense, especially after we had given up the goal, did a great job of staying turned on through the rest of overtime, clearing out crosses, things like that. We still have the issue of sometimes they don't take it to the corner to close out the clock. Richmond's the kind of team that's going to punish you if you don't do that. So if we were to get a lead and we find ourselves in the offensive end, take that ball to the corner, run time off the clock, make them foul you, push you down, kick the ball out of bounds, surrender a throw in that's deep in that corner. But this isn't the time to pad your stats and try to cut in where you think you see some space and make it 2-0 if it's a 1-0 game.
I completely agree with all of that. All right, so let's turn our heads to Richmond. You and a number of other fans will actually be in the stands there in Richmond, along with what I'm anticipating between 4,000 and 5,000 fans. Like, they had a great crowd for their last home game. I fully expect them to have a great crowd for this. Are you expecting any sort of changes to the lineup when we take a look at what we put out there for Union Omaha versus what we would put out there to face a very strong, highly powerful scoring and defensive team?
We have not made a lot of changes down this stretch run unless there is some kind of injury or something like that. That's the case. It wouldn't shock me to see Rafa Mensingen come in and start for Ray. And the only other change that could possibly happen, Nico Cardona came off late. You could see he was kind of struggling with something in his leg, whether it was a pulled hammy, pulled quad. Hopefully it's just a pull. And so I don't know the state of his health. He may be someone that is on the bench with Devin Benton coming to make the start because of that injury. It may have been something that, felt bad at the time and he's been able to ice and rest up. And so if he's in the starting lineup, then that would make sense. But those are the only two changes that I would foresee.
So we didn't talk at all about this. But how many subs are you allowed in USL League One?
So it should be 5. I did notice, and it may have been maybe a rule about overtime. With the overtime that they may allow another substitution, that both teams had 6 changes made.
The entire bench, excluding the backup keepers, were in the game.
So it may also just be that, it's League One refs and they forget simple things like that. But make a big show out of pointing to places and tapping their head to show how in charge they are, when really all it takes is the competence to know, hey, you've used all of your subs, or hey, this is the second time I've shown you a yellow card tonight.
Yeah, so the other big surprise in this game that we had versus Union Omaha was who was up top for the first time in a long time. Do you think we're going to see him starting again?
Yes. I do think David Teixeira will start. I think you'll have Juan Galindrez come off the bench, 45th, somewhere between the 45th to 60th, and come at a tired Richmond defense.
The only other change I think I would make is I think we should see either Teixeira or Gutierrez start in place of España, who I just feel like hasn't had a good game in a little bit yet.
Yeah.
And that's not meant as a knock against him. I like España a lot. I just think one of those guys could end up getting in there. Like, we talked a little bit about, like, Ray Ortiz could be on the bench and be a game changer, and then he ends up starting in the last game, right?
Yeah.
The other side of it is, you know, depending on what's going on, like if we don't have Cardona available to us, might we see a blast from the past that has been, for whatever reason, kind of disappeared from everywhere. And my mind just blanked on his name because I haven't seen him in so long. But I've got to believe
Sebastian,
you know what I'm talking
Capizucci?
About. Exactly. Like, could we see Capizucci if Cardona is hurt? Do you think Capizucci makes the drive?
Yeah, I think he probably would get to ride the bus. But dad joke there. I totally gotcha. Anyway, I think he's the logical choice. If Nico Cardona is injured, cannot play, then I think he's the player who has the ability to play centrally if they need, if say there's a player that's on a yellow, they don't want to get suspended, or to be able to play outside on the right. Where Cardona has been playing. So because he has not had a chance to play in so long, from what I know, he is fully healthy, but because he hasn't had a chance to be on the field in so long, I would see him maybe as the person taking the bench spot and DJ getting the start. But I do think that's the, if you're looking at the defenders that we have, I think that's the natural choice if Nico is in a situation where he's not able to go.
All right. So I'm going to set you up now to look at Richmond. Who are the two players on Richmond that if you're, say you've been living in a box and you just have no idea what Richmond has and brings, who are the two players that a fan should be most aware of going into this game?
I think the two players, there's of course the League One Golden Boot winner, Emiliano Terzaghi, is a very dangerous player when he actually decides to stay upright, as we just talked about earlier. Jonathan Bolaños. I think it's Bolaños, who is another, he's one of their wingers, midfielders. And, you know, when you have to do as much as the Red Wolves and lots of teams in League One do to try to keep Terzaghi contained, it opens up a lot of space for him. And he is a speedy player and a dangerous player. And so he's another one that you have to keep track of. You know, Richmond led the league in goals scored. So is that correct?
That is correct. Yeah, they were at 54. They beat us out by 2 goals.
So they are a dangerous team going forward. They like to absorb, but they have a talented group that can get up the wings and counterattack you and catch you off guard. So that's something that we have to, those two players are ones that we'd have to look out for. Of course, we love Fitzy, and we love to give him a hard time because he is such a great player. He's been around from the very beginning of League One with the Richmond Kickers, is a very good goalkeeper, makes a lot of good saves, Fitzy.
Good save, Fitzy.
And so, yeah, we like to give him a hard time, but that's because of how talented he is. So he is a player that you want to be on the lookout for, but we've scored on him. So it's not as if the Red Wolves are looking at this as if he's an impenetrable wall. It really comes down to, are we going to be able to stay organized enough to keep those dangerous attacking players out? And eventually, I think we can break them down.
So there have been 3 games all year that Richmond has not scored in. A 1-0 loss to us on April 16th. A 1-0 loss to Ford Madison on May 7th. And a 1-0 loss to the Greenville Triumph on August 13th. All that to say, this is not a team that you're going to go in more than likely and win 1-0. This is not a team that you're going to win by a large margin against. They have 7 losses on the season, which was tied with Union Omaha for the least amount of losses. There's a reason for that. Fitzy's part of it, but the other part of it is they score in every game. You got to score 2 typically to beat them. Now, if you're us, you got to feel pretty good about that because we're the second highest scoring team, right? Like if there's a team that's going to score 2 on them, it's us. I mean, we scored 3 on them, right? Granted, they scored 3 on us in that game, but let's not focus, or 2, sorry, 2-2. But let's not focus on the fact that we didn't win the game that we scored 2 on, and we won the game that we scored 1 on. They, even looking at their recent history, though, this is not a team on a hot streak. Like, they've won 1 of their last 5. They tied the other 4. You can't tie in the playoffs. we looked pretty good in this game versus Union Omaha. Union Omaha is a good team. Like, I like giving them a hard time, but when you have Nuhu, who averages less than a goal a game, he, in all honesty, if you look at the stats, it's probably less than a goal a game if you include this game, because it went into extra time. So it was, right, he allowed one goal in the equivalent.
On the per minute.
Yeah, on the per minute, he's still less than a goal per minute on average for 90 minutes. So, like, he hit, I think his thing was 0.9. Like, he almost hit it perfectly. All that to say, like, they haven't been prolific lately. One goal versus Greenville, one goal versus Forward, one goal versus Tormenta, one goal versus Central Valley, two versus us. The last time they scored two goals was versus us when they tied us, and we had a red card.
Yes.
So, I don't feel that, like, I'm not that worried about their scoring. I think it's down, and here's the other side of it. And this is an amazing thing to think about. The Red Wolves had two defensive players on the first and second teams for all league. Neither player played the whole season.
Mm-hmm.
Let that sink in for a second. Two players that were considered two of the top eight players in the league in defense were on our team, and they only played half the season. That should give you some confidence about your defense. I do take issue a little bit with our offense. I think we've rotated so much that there's not cohesion up there.
Mm-hmm.
And that worries me. But I'm not worried that we're going to give up more than two goals. So I think if we can go out there and score two goals, I think we can win this. What is your prediction as we head into there?
So I hate doing the prediction part. I feel like this is a one-goal game, as in the deficit is going to be one goal.
Yeah.
It's either going to be, to me, it's either a 2-1 for Richmond or a 2-1 for the Red Wolves. I do believe we have the talent to get those two goals. I believe we have the defense to hold Richmond to the one goal. I think they see the prize, the light at the end of the tunnel. And the guys are, you know, they're together, they're united, they're excited. There's going to be fans that are definitely traveling. They're going to make their voices heard. Maybe less now that they found out that I'm going to be there. Hopefully not. So there's going to be support that I think is going to help turn things around. We've struggled a little bit on the road of not looking, you know, completely turned on. Now it's playoff time, and I think we've made that adjustment. So I think we can come away with a 2-1 victory.
So, I'm with you. I think we can go on the road, and I think we can win this game, you know, with a 2-1 victory. We played them three times, and we were 1-1-1, right? One win, one tie, one loss. And that says toss up all day long. What's funny about that is we both have a win in the other team's stadium, right? So, there's not this great home field or home turf advantage. The other thing that's interesting when you go back and you look at some of the stats is we have consistently dominated in shots. Consistently. And considering they're the top scoring team in the league, that's a surprising stat. In the first game in April, we had 15 shots. They had 8. We had 4 on target. They had 0 on target. That's an impressive difference. Now, granted, this team has changed, right? So then you come back and you go, okay, well, what happened in June? Right. Well, we lost that game 3-0. And that was an ugly game. Like, it was a weird game because we had the possession for the vast majority of it. We almost doubled them in passes. We had almost 20% greater pass accuracy. Yet they still end up with 11 shots to our 6. So that's the outlier. Because if you go to the third game that was held here at home, we outshot them 19-7 and 10 on target to 3. Like, we dominated overall over the three course of the three games in total shots, shots on target, possession, pass completion, pass accuracy, all the things that should lead you towards scoring a lot. And I didn't go look at the XG on these, and I probably should have for all the stat nerds out there. But 2-1 victory is reasonable. 3-1 victory is possible. 2-1 loss, unfortunately, is also possible. But I'm going to go with the 2-1 victory, and we'll see what we get from there. Okay, so before we give a preview of the Greenville Tormenta game, I wanted to talk a little bit about some controversy that we saw after that game, to the point where a player for Charlotte was posting, basically ripping the heck out of the refs.
He sounded like me after quite a few of the Red Wolf games. To be completely honest.
He basically was just like, yeah, the refs in League One are terrible, and you guys got to do something about it because it's ruining the game, is basically what he said. And he's probably not wrong. So I'm going to show you the red card that was one of the things that he had a big beef with. So here's that.
Second half.
Second most. And I'm going to go back just a bit because his beef is not with the actual red card. His beef is right at the very beginning here. So those of you watching on YouTube, it's getting ready to play. It's right at the beginning. Look at where the person receiving this pass is and see if you know how to count 3 yards.
In the first 15 minutes of the second half, second most in the league, and now he's Sterling again.
All right, so that's all we need to see of it. He takes him down, and there's no doubt, no one disagrees with the fact that this, if he makes contact, that is denial of a goal-scoring opportunity. It just is. There's no one else to defend. He's taking him out. That's it, right? This is the next person that you see basically standing behind the tormented person that's on the ground was the next closest defender. The defender that took him out is actually fallen and forward, right? Mm-hmm. So this, no one's arguing this. What they're arguing is how this guy, who is obviously massively offsides and is coming back to the ball, when it's released, he's coming back at this point. He is so offsides it hurts.
Yeah, you're showing it here. Just as the player is playing the ball, you look and see that he's behind the defenders. How many times have we watched a person who is actually onside and runs past the defender get flagged for offside on this exact play, but somehow the assistant referee – of course, we can't see the assistant referee – there's a decent chance he's standing there with his flag up and the center referee is just ignoring him.
And that, yeah, I mean, I wouldn't put it past it in League One.
But yeah, but there's, you know, but you don't see the call. And this is, yeah, without VAR, without, you know, moving things really close and seeing those little lines on the computer, this is obvious. You don't need to have a microscope here to try to see that this guy's in offside position as the ball's getting played to him.
And the fact is, the person that comes and tracks him down from behind is the guy he's 3 yards from.
Right.
Like, so there's not some other player that comes across that was keeping him onside that's the reason. This is the closest player to him that's 3 yards behind him when the ball is given. Like, this is a clear offside. It's missed, results in a red card. And that's going to obviously, in the 48th minute of a second half in a 1-1 tie, that's going to have an impact on that game. And I think that impact is shown on what ultimately becomes the penalty that wins it. And I'm going to play this for you as well, because the reason I say that is they have one less defender. It's a central defender that they lost. This is a corner play. In corners, you're typically, your guys who are defending against crosses and things like that are central defenders. They have down one, and this is what results. And I want your opinion if this should have been, in your opinion, if this should have been a penalty opportunity.
Dejas comes for it, doesn't get there. Bill Hart looks for the handball from Bennett.
And I'm going to take this all the way through the slow motion.
It will be a penalty kick, it appears. Here's another look at it here from the slow motion. The arms were up, and it, from that angle, it looked like it hit him in the face, didn't it?
So the commentator goes, from that angle, it looks like it hits him in the face. The part for me, and the part I'm going to ask you about, is right, if you're watching on YouTube, you can see what I'm talking about. But right about, oh, I don't know, here? Does that hit his chest, or does that hit the arm?
Yeah, no, watching the slow-mo the first time, to me, felt like that's hitting him kind of in his armpit and rolling up his arm, not rolling off his face. Part of that is that from that angle, if that hits him in the face, he's standing stooped over, holding his eye, you know, rubbing the side of his head. You know, those soccer balls are inflated pretty full. They're pretty hard. If you've ever like heard them kick a ball in one of these games, when you sit close enough to the field, our stadium's about the only one you're close enough to be able to do that. So if that's hitting him in the face, then like his head's rocking back, he's rubbing himself in the eye. So I really do think this was a good call. And he doesn't do himself any favors turning to face the offensive player and putting his hands up like he's trying to block a punt.
I'm trying to find where that is. There it is. Like your play can't be, okay, I'm going up, and then, oh, I got hit in the arm. Well, yeah, because you've got your hands up.
Yeah, like you're making himself bigger, stretching himself out. Honestly, the more that I look at this, the more I think it probably was an okay call.
Yeah, so this is one of those that I feel like if they had VAR, it would have been one of those, like, yeah, the call stands. Like, it would have come up and said, call stands. Like, not confirmed or whatever. I don't remember what the terms they use are, but
it's... So, one of the other things that you would get, you know, if you have VAR, if you're in a Premier League stadium where there's, like, 20 cameras, you have three or four different angles that maybe give you a better look at to whether or not this does hit him in the chest, in the face, or whether it rolls up his arm. In League One, unfortunately, we have two cameras that are in the exact same position. One is zoomed up close and the other has a little bit wider angle. And so this is the only way we're ever going to see how this happened. The only other person, I'm pointing to the screen, but this little ball kid that's down
he's here, got a great angle.
Yeah, he's the only other person that will know whether or not that actually hit him in the face or hit him in the arm. And he doesn't even look like he's looking. Like, he looks like he's looking in the goal. So he might not know either.
Yeah, so all that to say, first call, agree with the Charlotte guy. Second one, dude, don't jump up like you're auditioning for the Atlanta Falcons, and maybe you'll get the call next time.
So, you know, all the controversy about banning headers in youth soccer, that play right there is what you see from 8-year-olds who are not allowed to head the ball.
That's basically what they do.
And put their arms up to keep it from hitting them in the head because they don't want to get called for heading the ball.
Yeah. and then you have to untrain them from it that first year that they can head it. It's interesting. All right. So because of that, Tormenta gets the win, which means for if you were not paying attention last week, that means we can't host the final. So we're going to be either... Once again, anytime we do these predictions, we assume we win, right? So when we look at this Greenville Tormenta game, all I care about it from a standpoint of is, what do the Red Bulls want? Do we want to go to Greenville? Do we want to go to Tormenta? What do you think?
It's tough because we've had a hard time in Greenville and in Tormenta. I feel like we are probably more confident against Greenville. The last game we played against them was our 5-1 beatdown after the rain delay. Mm-hmm. And Greenville is, I think, another team that didn't finish lighting the league on fire. Like, we struggled through the end and still had a chance the last week of the season to finish in second place. If all of these other teams ahead of us had closed out their seasons on a strong run, then that wouldn't have, you know, that would have been foreclosed.
Yeah, we only got 7 points on our last five.
And it seems like none of the other teams got many more than us.
Yeah, I mean, they all got seven. Like the only team that got more than us was Tormenta because they beat us in that last game.
But
we lost two games in those five games. And we got the same amount of points because they're just tying and occasionally winning. Like, none of these teams did great down the stretch. I'm going to agree with you, but for a different reason. And this is going to sound like the League One, snooty snob thing here. But I would like to watch a game with fans, and I would like to watch Greenville because they actually have fans in the stands, and you can hear them. I also know for a fact that our team travels well to Greenville. We did it last year. I expect we would do it again. I won't be able to because my son is playing in a tournament in Knoxville that weekend, and his second game is at 3:40 on Sunday, assuming he makes the second game. So that's impossible for me. I actually may not even get to watch the final if it hits then. Let's just be honest, because I'll have to drive home at some point. So I'm a little bummed on the timing of that. Not that I'm rooting against my son to make the final, but it wouldn't be the worst thing ever.
Or rooting against the Red Bulls to make the final.
No, I want the Red Bulls to make it. It's more like
this seems like extra motivation. Hey guys, if you can win this game, you're completely screwing Adam over. So keep that in mind.
No, I think it's more of like me saying, listen, Jonah, you guys have won 3 tournaments already. Lose one for the Gipper. that's kind of where I'm at. No, I'm just kidding. But I would rather have Greenville because, honestly, Tormenta has had their stadium for 3 home games and not a single one of them has looked like it's actually sold out. And it's quiet. There was actually some Charlotte fans who claimed that they moved like other people in front of them because they were apparently close to the mic and you could only hear the Charlotte fans. So they moved fans over there in front of them to drown them out. Like, and I 100% believe their front office would do that because it's got to be pretty discouraging to rush to get your stadium finished so that you can host playoff games and you can have that those last 2 home games in the first playoff game and not be able to sell out a stadium that's currently 1/3 built. That's got to be discouraging. And it's not fun to watch. It's just not. Like, it's not loud. It's not a great atmosphere. Greenville's really weird, too, that only the riot section seems to make any noise, which I think is kind of fun for us because then we can hear the Red Bulls fans if we get there. So that's what I would root for because is for Greenville to win. I also just don't care for Tormenta's front office social media program. I think that they take pride in other people's misery, and that's just gross. Speaking directly about Bolt in that scenario. So it's another reason for me to root against them. But it would also be really cool to be able to say, we ran the gauntlet of who everybody expected to be the 3 hardest teams other than us, right? We beat Union.
Right.
We beat Richmond. We beat Greenville. That would feel better than we beat Richmond, and then we beat Tormenta, who, if we had won the final game, wouldn't have made the playoffs. Like, it's not the same. but
yeah,
maybe you do the whole, like, we already beat Greenville 5-1. We're avenging the Tormenta loss. I don't know. You can spin it a lot of ways, but we got to win to do that. All right. So anything else you want to talk about on the USL League One side before we switch gears?
No, I can't think of anything.
Excellent. All right. What do you got for us?
All right. So local roundups are great. Friends at the University of Tennessee Chattanooga, they ended up the season with a loss and a draw, but with those games, they were able to claim a share of their first ever Southern Conference regular season title. They got to take over the conference tournament as the 1 seed. So tonight, as we're recording this right now, they are playing a semifinal match against Wofford. They had hosted North Carolina, Greensboro, and Western Carolina before them. So whoever was the winner of the early match will play the winner of the UTC Wofford match on Sunday afternoon at the UTC Sports Complex. As long as UTC continues to win, they will get to host the conference final. And if they win that conference championship, then they should be qualifying for the NCAA Women's Tournament. So great. Wishing great luck to them. That they can get that berth, probably since it's their first ever SoCon title, it's probably their first tournament berth as well for that. So we're hoping that that goes well for them. And next weekend would be the conference final if they're hosting it. And then also we've talked a lot about the girls' high school championships. Some of those games are being played at CHI Memorial tonight. Other games will be played tomorrow. Starting at like 11 a.m. and going through the afternoon. Local teams that made state semifinals that was played around town, Boyd Buchanan, Baylor, GPS, East Hamilton, and Chattanooga School for Arts and Sciences. So congrats to all the ladies for those 5 clubs getting to the state semifinals. I believe right now GPS is the only local team. Boyd Buchanan might have. I need to double check and I can't move away. But GPS, I believe, is the only one actually of the local teams playing in a state title this weekend. So, but congrats to all those girls on a great season, making the semifinals in high school. No small feat. So that is a great season for any of them that were able to get that far.
Excellent. All right, and that brings us to everybody's favorite segment, the Bickles Wade Report.
So according to my wife last week, who was downstairs while I was recording this segment, I did scream at everyone. So I'd like to begin by apologizing for screaming to everyone while the music was blaring in my ears. Bickles Wade Town, back-to-back draws versus Dunstable and Kidlington. Bickles Wade FC, unfortunately, last weekend had a loss on the road against Didcut Town. But our friends at Bickles Wade United, they're on a hot streak, four straight wins, including a 4-0 drubbing of Baldock Town and a 2-0 win against Redbridge in the FA Vase tournament. And unscored upon in their last three matches, Bickles Wade United in Fuego. That would be your Bickles Wade report.
All right, Alex, I do want to give a quick update on what you had talked about. The who made what championships and such. Friday, October 28th at 4:00 at CHI Memorial Stadium, GPS won the state championship over Briarcrest.
Congrats to the Bruisers.
So well done. Well done, Bruisers. You guys should be very, very proud of yourself. And you were correct. Boyd Buchanan did lose in their semifinal game. So they did not make the final, and that GPS was the only team in locally to make their final. East Hamilton came real close, lost 1-0 in their semifinal match. But
East Hamilton on a great run. Like I said, last year they were a semifinalist, and the year before that they made the state final and I believe lost on PKs. So they are on a good run, playing good soccer out there at East Hamilton. Pay attention in the springtime. The Tennessee boys high school championships are going to be at CHI as well in the spring. And Georgia, of course, plays as well. And, you know, down in Whitfield County, Dalton, Cahola Creek, Southeast Whitfield, Northwest Whitfield, all of those schools in Georgia, very, very competitive teams. So there's a lot of good soccer that's going to take off in the spring as well.
Yep. All right. Well, I don't believe we have anything else. So on that note,
bye.
Man, we still need Jeff here for some sort of awesome ending.